Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your one-stop shop for raising kids in this tech-heavy world. We bring on professionals and experts to give you all the tools you need to help your kids become fire-breathing warriors that have the strength to break out of the mold society has put them in. At the end of the day, we're all here for one reason, to help save some kids. I'm your host, Nate Webb. Let's get to it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your host, Nate Webb, live in Studio Salt Lake City area, and we got a show for you today. In this day and age, we are trying so hard to create critical thinkers, especially in a world where we feel it's kind of pushing our kids less and less in that area. We have instant gratification and things that requires our kids to think less when we want them to think more. So today I brought on someone who can help with that, and I think you're going to love them so much. Please meet Katie Kimball. Katie is the national voice of Healthy Kids Cooking, a former teacher, two-time TEDx speaker, writer, and a mom of four kids. She founded the Kids Cook Real Food e-course, which was recommended by Wall Street Journal as the best online cooking class for kids. Her blog Kitchen Stewardship helps families stay healthy and happy without going crazy. And she's on a mission to connect families around healthy food, teach every kid how to cook, and help families instill all those important life skills. So welcome to the show, Katie.
Oh, thanks, Nate. I'm always blushing with the like big, long introduction thing. I'm a mom. I'm a teacher. I talk a lot.
I feel that. As a former educator myself, I was a high school counselor for like the last 4.5 years. So I get it. Me too. So where are you coming at us from? Where are you at right now?
I am in the southwest side of Michigan, the Grand Rapids area. So not Detroit, the second biggest city.
You're in Michigan. Okay. One of my friends from another great company, Protect Young Eyes. He's from Michigan, Chris McKenna. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Love him. Michigan. What's the weather over there right now? Is it sunny? Is it dreary?
Right now it's really gray and rainy. So in the last 10 days, we've had 90, we've had 50.
Okay. I was going to say gray and rainy. That's like Michigan all the time, right? Like
we're always gray. And I actually didn't realize that we're unique in that, but because we're surrounded by all these lakes, the clouds just pick up all the moisture and it's just always gray.
Does that mean like seasonal depression is like crazy over there, or do people just love it because that's just how it is?
No, I mean, we love summer. It's not always gray in the summer, but for 7 to 9 months of the year, there is a lot of gray. And I think we're like the third most obese state, which I would attribute to the seasonal effect.
Because you're sad. Yeah. And when you're sad, you cook cookies. Okay.
Exactly.
When you're sad. I get that. My older sister, she lived in Alaska for 5 years. And over in Anchorage, it's like sunny for like 6 months out of the year. And then 6 months of the year, it's just dark. Just dark. The sun does not come up for like maybe 2 hours. So yeah, she baked a lot of cookies. So I understand that. So tell us your story. How did you end up in this space? Like, you know, two-time TEDx speaker, you've been recommended by the Wall Street Journal, but you didn't start out here. How did you end up in this space?
No, we started out with a budget sheet in the red. Actually, that's how I got here. Right. Married right out of college. And I always knew I wanted to be an elementary teacher. I lived that dream for 2 years. And then we started having a family. But as a perfectionist, I knew I could not full-time mom and full-time teach. Mm. Like somebody, everyone would suffer. And so that, you know, the dream really was to be a stay-at-home mom. And after a couple of years of working like 6 hours a week, had baby number two, and that balance sheet just ended up in the red, even though I hadn't been making that much. Mm-hmm. So it was really a quest for like, should I do Pampered Chef? Should I write a book? Like, how am I going to bring in, you know, like a couple grand a year to help our family? And it turns out a book is not a very fast way to money. I did not know that. It's not a good way to money at all. Nor is it. And I don't know that it's a good way to make a difference either. So I had been sort of on a real food conversion, having babies and realizing that everything they ate was so important. Like maybe Hamburger Helper wasn't like the best thing to have, you know, every night.
Right.
So as I learned more about real food, my teacher brain was constantly going in the kitchen. Like, how can I help other moms who are feeling this tug, you know, to take care of their family's health and, but also to save time and to save their budget, which is just really complicated and tense. Like, how can I help other moms avoid the mistakes that I'm making and smooth this for them. Right. So as an educator, I was just churning and ended up taking the advice of someone who said, well, before you write a book, start a blog, see if anyone cares at all about your idea.
That's valid. Okay.
Yeah. So I did not know what a blog was at that time in 2008, but 3 months later I had started Kitchen Stewardship and I loved the interaction with the online community. I absolutely loved getting to know other bloggers, you know, through online interactions. It was great because of course I'm a mom of two little tiny children at that time. So I didn't have a ton of interaction without my kids, you know, like we did play dates and everything, but it was just really nice to be connected with other adult human beings. And I quickly realized I did not want to write a book anymore. I just wanted to do this online thing. And so that was, you know, almost 15 years ago. And it's just changed and ebbed and flowed from teaching adults to teaching kids to cook to just how can I get this mission out there that we really need to start young with everything from cooking to critical thinking.
Right. And so where along the road did you, I don't know, book a TEDx talk? You know, that's something that happened. Okay.
You know, as an online entrepreneur, you just sort of try everything, mm-hmm. you know? So I had done a good bit of media, TV and podcasts and varying levels of success, but not usually that much with TV. So I thought, well, what, maybe a TEDx is a way to like get the message out there to more than seven people watching the, you know, mid-morning show in our community or whatever.
Right. Daytime TV.
So then, and then I accidentally landed the second one, which ended up being much better. That one's on picky eating and it's done really, really well. But the critical thinking is definitely sort of near and dear to my heart. It's very much a cross section between what I teach at Kitchen Stewardship, which is that like how to figure out what's healthy, you know, how to assess all the information that we're getting and then practically implement it. And then of course at Kids Cook Real Food, we're just focusing on the kids. And so how do we teach our kids to assess all the information coming at them?
Well, and that's how I kind of initially got in contact with you because you host your summer camps every summer. And I was a part of that, putting out a bullying resiliency workshop. And I just was so impressed at the wide variety of people presenting skills at that workshop. Like it's not just cooking. It's like a whole slew of things. And it kind of all revolves around this critical thinking, you know, it's raising kids to be proactive in the way they have their, you know, their psychology essentially. And so your story of committing to Ask Lots of Questions and going against the flow has an interesting beginning. What happened to solidify your mindset around all that?
You know, I since childhood, like I was bullied as you were, maybe not to the extent, but you learn to, you either wilt or you put up a front, right?
Right. Get better or better.
I'm not a wilter. Yeah. I'm kind of brassy. And so I learned to put up the front where if I'm choosing to go against the flow, then if someone teases me about it, it doesn't matter because I made that choice. Whereas I was choosing to try to be popular and try to dress cool, and then I got teased about it, it's more crushing because it's like the opposite of what I wanted. So I'm like, if I just choose to be weird and they say you're weird, I'm like, yeah, duh, I know. So I learned, I think in middle school, high school to walk against the culture a little bit because of my like socializing, not going that well in elementary school. And it was really when in the health space in particular, my husband through college had walked this walk of being diagnosed with a chronic disease called Crohn's disease, which is an autoimmune inflammation of the small intestine. Mm-hmm. And so practically that meant every time he ate, he hurt. And he lost a lot of weight and took a variety of prescription drugs. And then 2 days after college graduation, they took out a foot of his intestine. So
just a foot.
Yeah. So instead of like steak after college graduation, he was eating Jell-O and drinking chicken broth because he was on a liquid diet to prepare for the surgery. It was lovely. And we were boyfriend and girlfriend at that time, but I watched, you know, I kind of watched him go through that and watched him recover. And one of the things the surgeon said at the follow-up or kind of when he checked out of the hospital was, you know, well, I'll see you back in 7 years. Because that's the average amount of time that a Crohn's patient needs more intestine taken out because the inflammation is so bad that meds can't touch it.
Really? So did they just usually end up with no intestines just by the end of their life kind of thing?
That's a great question. I never had to research that because the story gets better at this point.
Oh, good.
It does. Yeah. So I felt like that phrase, like see you back in 7 years, was kind of like the kids in high school saying, Katie, you're dressed so dumb. You look so weird. And I was like, No, like I just wanted to push against that so hard. I'm like, that cannot be the answer. Like, this is just not okay.
Right.
And so that led, and then we got married. And so now I'm like invested in this dude, right? Like, now I'm not just the girlfriend.
We're in this for the long haul, man.
Exactly. Well, and it's partially genetic, Crohn's disease. So there's a concern there for the children that we're about to embark on. And I ended up doing a little bit of research and then a lot of research. And, you know, we played around with his diet. He actually had a really bad flare up right around the time my daughter, our number two, was born. So like he had diarrhea every day for 2 months. I bet you probably don't talk about stuff like that a lot on your podcast, but really fun. Yeah. Oh, it was awful. And prescription antidiarrheals, couldn't touch it. Nothing could touch it. And I went to this talk because I was starting to get into my like online health space. Mm-hmm. And I went to a talk by a guy who had nearly died of Crohn's disease. It was a total God thing. And I came home and I said to my husband, honey, starting tomorrow, you're not eating any more gluten, dairy, sugar, legumes, or grains or something like that. It was a big long list. And he was like, where did you go and why did I let you? Like, please stay home more often with the children. So we just radically cut him off of all sorts of stuff. And Nate, within 2 days, he had no diarrhea.
Oh, wow.
Done. Gone. Like I like called his doctor. I'm like, listen, this is so cool. Like you need to know this so you can help other people. And they were like, blah, blah, blah. Like we'll write it down. Did not care. I know I made no difference. And I thought this is just not like, I don't like this medical system. I don't want to be part of it. And so for me, that was what cemented like that. Not only could they not help him and food did, but they mm-hmm. didn't care that he felt better. I was like,
oh no, man.
Not okay.
Man. And so like that kind of got you to like, I don't know. I'm going to ask questions about everything always because holy crap, that worked out. Right.
Yes. Man. Yes. Where it's like nothing. I take very little at face value when it's coming at me out of the health space or the media space or a number of other places.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. And so when it comes to, you know, asking, I don't know, thinking critically, right. Asking questions, things like that. With little kids, didn't really got a whole lot of executive function or logic yet. I know that very much right now. I have a almost 3-year-old who, man, like logic sometimes is there, but most time it's just like trigger gets triggered and he's full blown 100%. And so how do we get them to, I don't know, think like that? Because I mean, thinking critically, we don't want to say like, oh, this doesn't apply to parents of littles. No, like it shouldn't. It does. But how?
Exactly. Well, I think while we can't teach our 3-year-olds and our 5-year-olds to actually employ critical thinking, like in the, you know, strict definition of the word, there's foundations of critical thinking. And I call them curiosity, adaptability, and resilience.
Ooh.
Right. So if we can help our little kids hold on to their natural curiosity by not squashing their questions and also by not immediately answering their questions, right? If they're asking why or what or how, we can fire quick answers and end the conversation, or we can reflect and say, I wonder, what do you think? Right? So we're just teaching them, anybody can ask questions, right? Your 2 or 3-year-old always is asking why.
Yes.
And sometimes we get annoyed. So like, that's the message for parents of littles. It's just like, remember that they need that. I've got an 8, almost 9-year-old right now as my youngest. And he is very curious and he likes to ask questions, but he also likes to state his wonderings as fact. So my current goal with him is I'll say things like, Gabe, I love that you're curious. I need you to keep being curious, but you got to remember that, you know, keep asking the questions and wonder and not just say like, this must be because I think it, you know? So there's either, you know, I have to teach him to like destabilize his thinking. You care, not probably not always right because you're 8.
Yeah.
So curiosity, and that applies to teens too, is how do we continue? How do we grow that curiosity from preschool through elementary school, middle school, and high school, and just keep them being curious about the world? Because that is that foundation of question asking and critical thinking. And then adaptability, which is kind of what I touched on with my Gabe, is like even when we think something is true, most of the time we want to keep that a little bit unsettled, a little bit at least open,
right?
To change and be okay. I mean, kids are not okay with change. I'm really, personality wise, I don't like change at all. And so continuing to make sure we give kids options and opportunities to feel what change is like and feel what flexibility and adaptability need, you know, is like, and be like, talk them through that, you know? Yeah. So when they're not in frantic brain, right. They're not in
panic, fight or flight.
Yes. When like after the fact, talking about the reality of, you know, I understand that you wanted to go for ice cream and then it rained and we decided to put off our ice cream biking trip until tomorrow, you know, and you cried, but let's talk about this. How did that make you feel? Right. Did it help you feel better? You know, did it change the situation?
Right.
Was the situation a big deal or a little deal? I say that a lot to my little kids, big deal or a little deal? Like, is this worth, you know, so right. Just trying to help them really be flexible. And that's a challenge for all parents. But when you think of it as like a critical thinking goal, that's really, really good. And then what you talk about is resilience, is how do we, you know, how do we bounce back when mm-hmm. things inevitably do go wrong? Because part of critical thinking is likely going to be putting yourself out there. And like I say, I would say pushing against the culture and swimming against the stream, that's really difficult. And not only will situations be difficult, but people will make life difficult for you
when you do that.
So you've got to kind of build up that suit of armor of resilience. And so how do we do that as parents? Again, it's helping put our kids in those situations where maybe they're going to be a little different. They're going to think a little different. Their lunch or their water bottle or their backpack or their shoes are going to look a little different, you know, and then how do we support them through that, both with just our love and care and attention and also strategies to be more resilient.
Right. I think as parents, we kind of get scared when our kids are different. Like we're scared that like we think of our own experiences getting bullied or our own experience with unkindness. And we're scared when our kids are acting different. Like, oh my gosh, they're not acting like a stereotypical boy or girl. And it's hard for us sometimes to let that go and let them embrace their weird, embrace the stuff that makes them unique and makes them them. We're learning that right now. Our oldest son, our 5-year-old, he loves playing kitchen. He has his own play kitchen. He loves ingredients. He loves the color pink. He loves dancing. He loves the arts. He loves all these things. And at first, we were a little nervous, like sending him off to preschool and kindergarten, because he did not love all the stereotypical boy things that your stereotypical boy loves, you know, dirts and cars and gruff and rough. And he loves roughhousing. Don't get me wrong, but he's actually pretty clean. He's like, I got to wash my hands, Dad. But like, he loves cooking. He loves the kitchen. He loves getting the apron on. He's always pushing up a chair up to the stove while my wife's cooking and wants to help out and stuff like that. And we're trying real hard to teach him to embrace that, to not be ashamed of any of those things that make him different or other people might say weird, because that's his superpower. You know, we need to help our kids find those superpowers and help them freaking embrace those things, because those are the things that are going to, you know, propel them throughout their life. And not being afraid of those things that make them different. So you have kids of all different ages. Where's your age range for your kids? You have your 9-year-old, you said?
Yep. He's almost 9. I've got a 3rd grader, a 7th grader, 10th grader, and our oldest just graduated high school. And
oh my gosh.
This crazy phase where he still lives in our house. So I have like parenting handbook part 2, the adult lives in your house trying to build his own business and figure out life.
Oh, really?
During a gap year.
You raised an entrepreneur. Ah, surprise, surprise. So that is also a thing too, having an adult in your home while you're trying to raise little kids as well. That can provide for some clashy moments. That reminds me of when I first saw, I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I served a mission. I spent 2 years volunteering in the Philippines. And when I came home, in September, and the college semester starts in August. And so I had to wait till January for the next college semester. So I was home for like 6 or 7 months, and I was a 21-year-old. And my parents still had lots of kids, school-age kids at home. So they're trying to have like these little kid rules with this adult in the home. And I'm like, no, I want to come home when I want to come home. And like, you know, there was a lot of clash learning that, you know, having an adult in the home and all this stuff. So you have a wide variety of kids in your house right now. You got a big kid, and then you have a kid who's just now becoming an actual kid, like transitioning from little kid to I'm a kid. And so how does practical thinking skills, you know, the practicality of it all work out for them, you know, like environmentally friendly habits that we can instill in them?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because you said a lot of parents don't want their kids, or they have trouble like embracing their kids weird. And I'm like, man, that's not me, but it's because I've been embracing my own weird for like 30
because
years.
Right, because
you're
past. Yeah.
Yeah. But I see how other parents, you know, might not. So like my oldest doesn't like to wear shoes, and then whenever he can, he's involved in theater a lot. And so he's often, I'll see like pictures of their rehearsals and stuff, and he doesn't have shoes on stage. He'll walk to school with no shoes. And he's kind of was known in high school as like the kid who didn't wear shoes. But he also did enough. He did other successful things that he was like really well respected. And I've always loved watching him grow up, that he did not care about the name brands on his clothes, that he had no problem. You know, you mentioned like some of our values include being environmentally friendly. Like we were crunchy before it was cool. And he never had a problem taking our stainless steel lunchbox with like healthy looking leftovers and stuff like that. Number two is a girl. Leah's in 10th grade, and she has had far, far more. I don't know how to teach girls resilience, or if she just needs more time, but she definitely became a wilting flower when kids would tease her for her lunches. But I'm not going to change our family values and feed her a bunch of sugar and pack in plastic just because of other kids. So my hope is that when she's 30, she is not on a therapist couch, but she's looking back and going, okay, it is better to stand strong and, you know, hold fast to your values and do what you know is right. We're in the trenches with that one right now. But morally, she does not budge. She chooses good friends. She ditches friends who have risky behaviors. And so like, we're okay. She's going to make it. We just need to get her through high school. But overall, I do think it's really, really good to celebrate that family culture. That's kind of how we do it with like the critical thinking and building your values into life. Like we'll actually say things like, Kimball's do this, right? Kimball's bike to school.
I like that.
Hardly anybody else bikes to school. Kimball's use regular water bottles. You know, we go to events where a bunch of people are coming together and there's like hundreds of plastic water bottles being given away, but we always bring our own. It's tiny. It's tiny, tiny, tiny. Right. But then that's part of our family culture. And we talk about it every so often. We'll say, you know, if we think of all the water bottles that we've saved in 18 years of parenting, you know, they would probably fill every space in our house. Really? And then you go, oh, that's not a tiny thing anymore. Like that's actually a lot of waste reduced in the world, and also a really good habit for our kids. So I strongly believe in baby steps and just tiny little changes adding up. And you know what? I just heard a great quote that we don't become extraordinary by doing extraordinary things, but by doing ordinary things for an extraordinary amount of time. Oh, and I wish I could remember to whom to attribute that, but it's like exactly my life. Like we just
thank you, internet.
Yeah, we just need to do these ordinary things for an extraordinary amount of time and remain consistent. And I think that's how we build our kids' brains.
I think that's something that we all could do a little bit more, is talk about our family values so that our kids aren't afraid or ashamed when they have to uphold them. You know, they know why we are the way we are. They know why, you know, we don't have a smartphone, or why we eat healthy foods, or why X, Y, and Z. They know why, and they embrace why. And that way, when it comes up, even if they're a wilting flower, they don't budge. You know, they're able to do that. Now you are able to kind of with your brand, right? The kitchen, the cooking stuff. How do you see that the kitchen is the lab, right? For curiosity, critical thinking, all those good things. Cause I mean, especially with what you do, man, that's where you can just create and kind of show your kids that as well.
Yeah. I tell parents all the time that the kitchen is both like the playing field and the science lab for anything you want your kids to practice, you know, or to grow in them. First of all, I mean, boy, curiosity and critical thinking. There's so much failure in the kitchen, which is fantastic.
Yes, there is.
So much. And usually it's not, you know, it's not million-dollar failures. it's not day crushing or week crushing failures. It's just like you've wasted an hour or something, you know what I mean? And like $11. They're very acceptable risks. And I know a lot of parents get nervous about knives and fire and like danger, like physical danger in the kitchen. But I just think it's so amazing to watch your children do something risky, like using a chef's knife, right? And by and large, most of them, except for those who are like really lacking in impulse control, sometimes they might need a little longer. They might need to grow up a little more. But most kids, when they're presented with something like a sharp knife, they get it. They feel like the weight in the room, that this is a serious topic and I am not to mess around right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so for me, like watching my kids learn to use knives and learn to work with very hot things, it gave me a lot more confidence in allowing them to use smartphones. And we started out with dumb phones that look like smartphones. I think those are brilliant for parents. That's very much our family culture, even though all the other kids, in air quotes, had real cell phones, you know. Our kids were pretty old in comparison to their cohort group. But I felt confident in helping them learn.
Oh no, she cut out. Oh no, she cut out.
A part of it is learning from failure.
Oh man, this is being so good right now. Oh, but she's cutting out her internet.
Oh, did I cut out?
Shoot. Oh, she's back. She's back. We're good.
Yep.
We're good.
I was hoping the new computer would fix that. Should I back up a little bit?
No, you're good. You're good. Just keep on going.
Okay.
Plow ahead.
Yeah. So in the kitchen, just that like learning from failure is so important for resilience. Taking those acceptable risks is so important with like learning to be confident in yourself. Then there's so much avenue for creativity, you know, tweaking other people's recipes or trying to make up something from scratch. When we teach kids, we have a couple different lessons that are all about creativity. Like we have them get all of their herbs and spices out and sniff them and imagine, you know, what they might apply to, what kinds of dishes, and separate them into, I think this is pleasant and unpleasant. And we talk about how those are your opinions. And remember that not everyone thinks like you or, you know, or tastes like you. So that's kind of that thinking outside yourself, which is also critical thinking. And then our very last lesson is how to make a leftovers bowl, just like looking at different leftovers that you might have in the fridge and how to combine them together into a totally new dish. So we're really giving kids that agency, you know, to kind of take their own steps. And a lot of that applies really well to the rest of life, right? Acceptable risk, feeling confident, putting things together, like problem solving. It's very much building the brain and plus working alongside your adult, you know, your parent, your grandparent in the kitchen is just an incredible bonding opportunity where we can pass down our values, you know, our personality, our goals for our kids in that like shoulder to shoulder work session.
Well, and so what in this day and age, why is critical thinking more important than ever?
Oh, well, we've talked about how kids treat each other. I don't know if that's but you know, the internet has made it so much more anonymous and it has made our information coming from the media or blogs or whatever so much more filtered and less authentic.
Yeah.
That we just we have to be able to filter our information. We have to be able to filter, you know, our people. And it's just such a volatile world. It feels like
it really is
that we've got to really be able to help our kids have every single asset and tool they possibly can.
It can be really hard to discern, you know, reality from I don't know, fake things, especially for kids, right? Like they see the airbrushed models on social media, they see the unrealistic expectations of this internet, and they're like, "That's real life." And we're like, "No, that's not real life." But if they were able to assess and see, okay, is this what this person looks like all the time? Probably not. Is this just a polished something that this person posted because it looked aesthetically pleasing for your social media? Probably yes. You know, the ability to critically think is something that is so underrated right now because the world of instant gratification is so enticing, right? You can just give your kids an iPad or you yourself, if you have a question, we can just Google it instead of, you know, having to find out some long forms, which is great. It is a blessing, but it's also, it's a double-edged sword because the instant gratification takes away the need to think critically sometimes. And so sometimes forcing our kids, like you said, to think critically. I love what you said earlier, especially you moms with little kids listening. When we have our 2-year-olds that are always like, why, like all the time, 15 hours later, why, not answering immediately. Like you said earlier, like with one of my kids, with my 2-year-old earlier today, I don't even know what I said. I just remember he was like, why? And I was like, I don't know. Why do you think? And he stopped for like a solid 30 seconds, just dead in his tracks, just like staring into blank space. I don't know. And I was like, yes. Oh, yes. Okay. 1 point for dad. It's so fun to see those things. And so teaching your kids to be critical, it can also be really, really fun. So with our kids, though, right now, a lot of people feel like they're losing hope. Right. They're with a rising generation, mental health, this or that. And I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of hope that kids are really resilient and they're able to build these skills. What are your thoughts?
I do have a lot of hope. I mean, I see it. I'm a mixed bag. I have a lot of hope. And every so often I'm like, oh my goodness, it's all going crazy. But I do think our kids are gaining that ability to see what they don't like, to see just this like strong disparity between groups among the adults and go, you know, I don't like that feeling. I don't like the lack of peace that is formed there. And to see even social media, we are teaching them, like, see if the kids is doing such good work in teaching our kids how to assess how that things are not always as they seem. And so just as, you know, this young generation is going to be so much quicker to learn new technology and use technology than we adults are, I think, hope that they will also be quicker to assess reality through that technology, just because their eyes are being opened. For my critical thinking TEDx, I interviewed one of Paul's teachers, his, what is APUSH? AP US history. Yeah. His AP US history teacher. So he does, you know, he's in the social studies and the civics world, and he teaches kids critical thinking. So it was so fascinating as I was preparing this talk, Paul would come home and tell these stories of class and, you know, learning literally about critical thinking and using headline, comparison tools to show that on the same day, two headlines can be posted by two different media outlets that are very opposing. And, you know, so it was really, really great. And I thought, I got to talk to this guy. And one thing that he said, he's a teacher of 30 years. So he's seen a lot of change. And
he's been teaching for a hot second.
Yes. He said that he has a lot of hope, that he sees in this particular high school generation a deep amount of critical thinking, and that they want what's best for their world. They want what's best for themselves. And they understand that there's not a straight and easy path to answer. Mm-hmm. So I am buoyed by that, because he's more in the trenches, you know, than I am. I just kind of see my kids in their close circle, but he sees a decent cross section. So at least in our community, he is seeing a lot of hope. And so I'm going to hold on to that and tuck it away in my heart too.
No, and I completely agree with that. I've been a high school counselor for the last 4 years. And I completely agree that kids right now, like, while yes, it is a scary world to raise kids in with the internet and cyber bullies and predators and all these other things that are scary, yes, it has also never been a better time to be a human being. Like, the kindness that is out there is abundant. People have never been more understanding of differences. People have never been more accepting of different points of view. And bullies aren't born, they're bred. And like, all these kids that are being raised right now, they're fantastic kids. There is so much hope for the rising generation. I am so, so excited for them. And this has been such a fun conversation. I've loved talking to you about, you know, critical thinking, curiosity, the kitchen. Yes, you dads out there, you can get in the kitchen too. But it's been awesome. So how can people see what's going on in your life? Shameless plug time. Let's hear it.
Absolutely. If you've got kids, which you probably do, and want them in the kitchen, kidscookrealfood.com. Or on Instagram at Kids Cook Real Food is where we do all of our cooking stuff. We always have some sort of free gift there on the homepage. And if you are an adult wishing you could feel less crazy about healthy things, kitchenstewardship.com is where we do all that stuff.
There you go. So go check them out. That'll be in the podcast description. She is wonderful, and the thing she's doing is wonderful as well. And thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Save the Kids podcast. If you like this episode, please leave a review. It helps more people to find us. And if you'd like Save the Kids to come to your school, church, community event, whatever it might be, fill out the speaker form in the podcast description so we can start that conversation. Let's save some kids. Always remember, you are wonderful, you are worthy, and you are worth it. Go home and give your kids an 8-second hug, and we'll see you on the next one.